Your masters want to stop me from helping him, Billington explains. He's very annoyed. He's been trapped for thousands of years, stranded on a plateau in the rarefied and chilly dark, unable to move, unable to heal, unable even to revive. Huge hoses dangle from the underside of the explorer's drilling deck, poking into the skin of the Thonian artifact like intravenous feeding lines. I blink and look back at Billington. He's lost it, I tell myself with gathering horror. Hasn't he? You've only just figured that out? Asks Ramona. And here I was thinking you were quick on the uptake. Despite the sarcasm, she feels very frightened, very cold. I think she knew some of this, but not the full scope of Billington's deviancy.
I know all about your masters, Billington adds in her direction.
He can't hear our silent exchange, feel Ramona testing the strength of her bonds, or recognize me scoping out the parametric strength of the wards he's positioned around us. He just wants to talk, wants someone to listen and understand the demon urges that keep him awake late in the night.
I know how they want to use him. They sent you to me in the hope of trading in a strong tool for a more powerful one. But he's not a tool. He's a cyborg warrior god, a maker of earthquakes and an eater of souls, birthed for a single purpose by the great powers of the upper mantle. It is his gesh to rejoin the holy struggle against the numinous aquatic vermin as soon as his body is sufficiently restored for him to resume residence in it. And it is our nature that the highest expression of our destiny must be to submit to his will and lend our strength to his glorious struggle.
Billington spins round abruptly and jabs a stiff-armed salute at the thing hanging in its titanium cradle outside the window. He raises his voice.
He demands and requires our submission.
Turning back to me, he shouts,
We must obey. There is glory in obedience, fitness in purpose.
He raises a clenched fist.
The deep god commands that his body be restored to its shining terror. You will help me. You will be of service.
Spittle lands on my face. I flinch, but I can't do anything about it. Can't move, don't dare express skepticism. Don't piss off the lunatic. I'm half convinced, with an icy certainty verging on terror, that he's going to kill one of us in the next couple of minutes.
How does he talk to you?
Ramona asks, only a faint unevenness in her voice betraying the fact that her palms are clammy and her heart is pounding like a drum. Billington deflates like a popped balloon, as if overcome with a self-conscious realization of what he must look like.
Oh, it's not voices in my head, if that's what you're worrying about, he says disparagingly.
His lips quirk.
I'm not mad, you know, although it helps in this line of work.
A guard is walking along the catwalk outside, followed by a flash of pink.
He doesn't really approve of madness among his minions. Says it makes their souls taste funny. No, we talk on the telephone. Conference calls every Friday morning at 9 a.m. EST.
He gestures at a console across the room, where an old Bakelite handset squats atop an old gray-painted circuit box that I recognize as an enclosure for Billington's gravedust communicator.
It's so much easier to just dial D for Dagon, so to speak, than to bother with the eerie voices and walls softening under your fingertips. And these days we've sorted out a telepresence solution. He's taken up residence in a host body so he can keep an eye on things in person while we restore his primary core to full functionality. Of course, it's energetically expensive for him to occupy another body, so we have to keep the sacrifice schedule in mind as a critical path element in the restoration project. But there's no shortage of 10th decile underperformers on the sales force.
Ah, yes. He glances at his watch.
Top of the hour, right on time.